Good morning, friends. It's Friday with Jim here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, ably assisted by engineer par excellence, Mr. Terry Wilson. Terry, thank you so much. You can speak.
Thank you for thanking me.
Happy to have with us today for our guest, Brad Johnson, who was assistant police chief until the retirement of the existing police chief, and now he is the police chief. And in addition to that, he has become the assistant city manager, wearing two hats. Brad, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be here.
Tell me a little bit about Brad Johnson and your kind of a little biography.
Well, I graduated high school in Clackamas, Oregon, kind of after a bit of a vagabond life with my dad growing up. Went in the tried college, wasn't so successful at college, went in the service for 3 years, served as a military police officer. Enjoyed that, decided I'd try it when I got out, and got hired by Amtrak PD. Worked for a year for Amtrak Police Department in New York City, New York, working in Penn Station. And didn't find that to be a very rewarding experience. Thought I hated policing at that point. Learned later what I really hated was New York City policing, not policing. Went home to where my parents had moved to at that point, which was Yakima, Washington. Met the love of my life while I was trying college a second time. And then got the bug to get back into policing again and started applying for places we wanted to live, which was the North Coast. And Astoria was the place that reached out and hired me back in 1992. Started as a police officer in 1992, working a lot of DUI enforcement at that point. My position was actually grant funded, so it was very important for us to do DUI funding so that I stayed employed.
Who was the chief when you went on board?
I was hired by a guy named Rich Lockwood, who very few people will remember because he was only with us for about 8 months. Rich had applied for a job with a California agency at the same time we hired him, and there was a pretty significant increase to his pension if he went back to California. So he left us. Shortly after I was hired, Rob Dupree, actually I was still in the Basic Academy when Rob Dupree became chief. So I'm the only hire by Rich Lockwood, actually.
Now, Rob Dupree, he's still in the area, isn't he? Doesn't he live across the river?
He did for some time. He's moved down to Sparks, Nevada.
Okay.
Tried to get halfway between his kids, actually, was his goal there.
Well, this new position that has kind of opened up for you, it's almost a mixture of two positions. Can you describe the job description?
Well, I will be the chief of police, which is was actually my goal, was to be chief of police, and had not really thought much about the other half of my new position, which is assistant city manager. There's only been, I am the third assistant city manager. The first was Paul Benoit, the second Brett Estes, and now I'm serving in that role as well. So it was a surprise when I was offered that. But as I started thinking about it, it really makes some sense in that the position in some ways is community policing for executives. It really is a matter of engaging community in new ways, and then also helping out with some other issues that city manager may need to get off his desk with labor issues or some of those things that I may be able to help him out with.
Yeah, would like to get into some discussion of community policing. That's been part of this department. Who was the first chief that brought that on board?
I would say that Ron Louie brought some of those elements without a formal plan.
Mm-hmm.
However, Rob Dupree was the one that divided the city into neighborhoods and started doing what most people would consider very traditional community policing with those defined neighborhoods and officers assigned to them.
Oh, excuse me, I thought my phone was going to go off. But describe for me, if you would, Brad, community policing. How does it actually work out in the community?
So community policing goes back to the late 1800s with Robert Peel and this concept that the police are the community and the community are the police, and that the police only serve at the pleasure of their community, and that they can only do their policing with the cooperation of the community. So with that kind of as a background, Astoria has been through several versions of community policing. And one of the things I like to say is Astoria doesn't need a community policing program. Astoria does community policing organically. Our officers working in a small town where we are engaged regularly are in the community. They're helping to coach. They're helping to work with community groups. They volunteer with Rotary. They volunteer with everything that you can imagine within our community. They're known to the community. They see their community at Safeway while they're shopping.
Yeah, they always wave at me when I drive by.
Yeah. I mean, we are approachable, and we are known to our community, and we have good relationships. And I think one of the things that, as chief, I'll want to focus on is not so much a program of community policing, but ensuring that we have legitimacy within our community, and that we aren't looking at just having legal authority, but having legitimate authority within our community so that we can really engage at a very high level with our community.
It's quite a different approach than we see, for example, in Ferguson, Missouri, and elsewhere where the police almost look like riot police and are actually battling the community.
It's those are tough times in those communities right now. And I think that some of that may come from having not deep relationships with your community, but yeah, these surface relationships that are enforcement oriented. I think that the roots of those issues are not in the incident that everybody's looking at, but in the relationship with the community. I had somebody a while back say, you know, aren't you glad you're not there?
Right.
And I said, well, I'm not sure I'm not glad I'm not there, because I think I may have done better. And because I think there are some things that, you know, you pay attention to these things on a daily basis before they get to the point where it is a crisis and you don't end up with the crisis.
I kind of get the feeling from reading and seeing those incidents that there's a real kind of racial component to those conflicts.
I think that's possible. I think that the other root issue there is socioeconomic conditions as well, as much as race in this day and age. Especially here on the West Coast, I think we're looking more at socioeconomic than race, because that is a real dividing line for our communities. And it's a problem for many of our police officers. Our police officers are primarily middle class. They grew up middle class. And when they're dealing with people in crisis, they look at options that a middle class person would look at, and not at things where a person doesn't have any other options because of their socioeconomic status. You know, they can't move. They can't leave their spouse that's abusing them. They don't see those other options. And one of the things we have to do is actually help people see the options that they do have in those situations to bridge some of those gaps.
What are some of the other items that you'll be looking forward to participating in as your new position, assistant city manager?
You know, I think some of the things that I'll be helping with are, it appears to be some labor issues right up front. One of the interesting things is that police managers are one of the few municipal entities where there's actually a requirement to go learn how to be a manager. In most other aspects of city government, a person promotes up through the ranks and they just kind of get handed the job, and there's a little on-the-job training on those kind of things or other knowledge that they grab along the way. For police officers, when you're promoted to sergeant, you have to go to a supervisory school. You have to learn these issues.
Yeah, where do you go to do that?
Now, it's the Basic Police Academy. For several years, there was not, I shouldn't say the Basic Police Academy, the Oregon Police Academy in Salem. It used to be, due to budget cuts, that we had removed all of the leadership plan programs from police training. So it was wherever you could find the skills you needed to satisfy your certification requirements. We're back to teaching that again I volunteer a couple days a month at the police academy teaching the leadership and management issues down there, and find that it is one of the most educational experiences I've ever done. I learned so much by being there and working with these great police officers that are learning how to be supervisors.
Yeah, I've had opportunities in the past to go speak to high school students mm-hmm. about career choices. And I'll tell you what, that's one of the toughest things I've ever done. It was very difficult. But, another issue that we're dealing with here, finally, hopefully it's tapering off, but this conflict between the district attorney and the city council regarding the DWI cases being handled in municipal court. Now, my understanding is that when one of your guys pulls somebody over, at that point, if he writes a ticket, correct me if I'm wrong, then he would define which court that case would go to.
We have a very strictly defined policy. The policy title is actually Restrictions on Discretion. And in that policy, it dictates where an officer is to cite things. And for all crimes that are misdemeanors, or traffic violations or violations of city code, the presumption is that those will go to Astoria Municipal Court. There are some very strictly defined exceptions to that. Domestic violence goes to Clatsop County Circuit Court. DUI, where there's a possibility of felony charges. DUI, where there's a reckless endangerment involved. And a few others. I think there's about 13 exceptions to that. And those are well-defined and not something that's optional to the officer. And that is because of what the courts have said, is that this can't be something that's just discretionary to the officer. It has to be something that is a universally applied policy. So they don't have much discretion in it.
Gotcha. Well, I'd like to remind our listeners, Terry, that we're listening to Coast Community Radio, and we're visiting today with Brad Johnson, who is brand new assistant city manager. And also, we've got a little kind of a mini pledge drive going on. Terry, can you talk about that?
Well, we had the pledge drive remembering the storm last Tuesday, and it was just for one day. We started at 7 o'clock in the morning and ended, I think, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we were very successful, and we thank all those who called us and contributed and renewed. We thank you for your faith in us, because when it gets bad out there, we want to be the one to go to, so you can figure out what's going on.
Thank you. Getting back with Chief Johnson, now, on this DWI thing, Brad, I'm still a little bit confused. At one point, here again, correct me if I'm wrong, the district attorney made an offer to the city council that he would be willing to take the municipal DWIs over to circuit court.
Right.
The city council politely thanked him and said, no, we'll just keep them here in municipal court. At that point, the district attorney apparently made a decision to keep chasing those cases for some reason. I never did understand why that was. Can you shed some light on that for me?
I really couldn't speak to the motivations behind it. It has been a very contentious issue for many years, and I'm glad to see it, I believe, resolved finally, because it was a distraction.
Not much to say on that issue. Well, how many officers do we have in the Astoria Police Department?
Right now we have 16 sworn. One of those... Well, actually, I take that back. We have 15 sworn currently, because we do have a vacancy created by Chief Curzon's retirement and my promotion. So we will hopefully be hiring one more soon to get us back to that 16. One of those 16, the 15 existing, is actually attending the Basic Police Academy currently. So we have 14 that are available to us.
Yeah.
And a normal strength of 16.
Can anybody go to the police academy? If I wanted to sign up, could I go over there and
In some states you could. Oregon is not one of those states. Actually, you have to be employed by a police agency prior to attending the basic police academy. And that allows the funding structure for that is a little unique as well in that sending someone to the basic police academy does not cost a municipality money, except for the officer's time. It is something that's paid for completely through tax and municipals or the assessments on citations.
One of the big issues in the county, particularly, and I assume in the city, is the drug problem, specifically the methamphetamines. What can we do as a community and as a police department to battle those really kind of ugly drugs?
Yeah, and right now, really, our current threat is a lot of heroin. Heroin has become the drug of choice locally, which is really it's a crisis in our community because of the nature of the addiction with heroin. And it flows out of – a lot of it flows out of prescription drugs where people have prescription drugs that have been prescribed to them. They get to the point where they either can't afford to maintain what has become an addiction with those prescription drugs or – they no longer can get the drugs legally prescribed, and heroin is a fraction of the cost. So they start turning that direction. And the opiate addictions are so severe, and that physical sickness, if they're not getting their high, is just debilitating to people. So we really do start seeing more and more crime tied to that, and it becomes a significant issue for our community.
So increased crime is one of the symptoms of that problem. What are some of the other things that we as a community might notice that would indicate there is a severe drug problem amongst us?
Seeing those indicators for the community is, you know, you may start seeing the person who just is not behaving normally, those friends and family that start becoming undependable or those kind of things where you'll start to notice it first is within your own circle of influence most likely. And then also with our homeless population where we'll start seeing some of it increasing there. And then, you know, the shoplifters that are affecting our business owners, those kind of things are going to be those places where – and then the poor folks that don't lock their cars and find all of their things that they've left in their car taken away. Those are the places we start to see it first in our community.
Have we seen an increase in car prowling or breaking and entering and those kind of things?
Car prowls really do go kind of cyclically through neighborhoods. The more we can get people to lock their cars, hide their valuables, take things in at night, the fewer we see because we don't see people breaking windows to go into cars. What we see is people going into unlocked cars and finding the cameras and the phones and the tablets and the laptops and the Christmas presents that are left sitting on the back seat and even purses, firearms. I mean, the crazy things that people leave in their unlocked cars.
You know, another issue that's been talked about a lot locally is pedestrian safety, particularly crosswalk safety. How can Astoria Police Department decrease the lack of safety in those crosswalks?
Well, I think that one of the things we see is getting people to wear clothing that contrasts with the background on the pedestrian side and to pay attention to their environment on the pedestrian side, and then getting drivers to set down their cell phones to pay attention to what's in front of them and to realize that every intersection is a crosswalk. A lot of people have this perception that the white lines painted on the ground are actually what makes the crosswalk. That's only true if it's mid-block. In Oregon, the law talks about marked and unmarked crosswalks. And when you look at the law for vehicles and the law for pedestrians together, it's clear that the law defines every intersection as being a crosswalk, marked or unmarked. So realizing that if somebody's trying to cross at a crosswalk, at a corner, you are actually required to stop for them. You're required to stop and give them the lane that you're that they're in and the adjacent lane. So if we can get drivers to pay attention to that and pedestrians to pay attention to the traffic around them and what they're wearing, I think we could really drop that down. Some of the ways that as a department we try to do that is we use our Facebook page to get out educational material talking about reflective and contrasting clothing, talking about what the law actually requires, and then just talking about general safety practices. And then we do enforcement. One of the grants we try to get every year is for pedestrian safety, where we will do focused enforcements on a intersection where we'll take a police officer, put them in plain clothes, have them crossing the street. We set up some rules on safe stopping distances so the officer can't start if somebody's within this safe zone. And then we'll stop people. And we kind of have different levels of enforcement there where if somebody made a mistake, we try to educate them. But if somebody's blatantly violating the law or putting the pedestrian at risk, then we will always cite in those cases. But the interesting thing is almost every time we do this, we end up with some pedestrians that are just crossing the street that aren't the police officer. And we almost always end up issuing tickets off of the pedestrian that's crying across the street. So obviously a problem, but something that we do try to address both through education and enforcement. And then also working with the engineering department to try to make some of our intersections safer. For instance, you'll see the striping in some of our intersections is changing to what's called a continental style with the bars instead of the lines.
Yeah.
Some things like that where some evidence-based practices where people have found this is an effective way to deal with this, and we're trying to implement those things.
You know, two or three years ago when Paul Benoit was the city manager, he came up with this plan to have pedestrians have little flags that they would wave when they were crossing. And but that didn't seem to work out exactly the way he planned. What happened there?
Well, I don't think it's fair to give Paul credit for that because I think that was a council initiative, actually, not Paul. But it did not work the way it was expected. We had an incredible amount of theft of the flags.
Oh.
We went through that initial supply, had to reorder fairly quickly, and then I don't think that anybody wanted to reorder a second time when that came up. We had some people using the flags for very creative purposes, decorating downtown in flower boxes. We found I actually saw a video posted on somebody's Facebook page of some creative dance done with the flags, yet I don't think they actually were doing what they were intended for. Good try, but that's one of the reasons we're trying to look at evidence-based practices to actually do things that have been proven to work in other places.
You know, one of the things that we're really proud of it as a community is our Riverwalk. What kind of challenges does that present to your department?
Well, one of the things, the Riverwalk is wonderful. I'm out there at least 5 days a week probably running it, and it is a wonderful asset to the community. One of the downsides of that development, though, is we didn't really give, as a city, thought to what we were going to do for enforcement and safety issues on it. Both the police and fire department don't really have a great way to respond to those areas that are not served by street ends. So that's one of the things working with the fire chief. I think we're going to come up with some things, gators, that kind of thing, to get into those areas. We do have a little our bubble car that we can get out on the Riverwalk in some areas, but not something where you could actually transport a patient. If you have somebody that's suffered a heart attack, broken leg, something like that, that's a long litter ride at this point. And so there's some things we need to do to address some of those issues. And then the issues of our homeless camping on it, aggressive panhandling down there, those kind of things become a problem. And working with the Parks Department, trying to find ways to address all those issues is one of those challenges.
Now, you mentioned the homeless. Do you have a handle on how big an issue that is for us? I mean, how many are there? And are they truly homeless, or what's going on there socially?
You know, there's a whole mixture of things there. Some of these folks that are down on our Riverwalk and around downtown, I've known my entire career here in Astoria PD. Others are people who are suffering from mental health issues, or people that came to Astoria because they heard this was a good place to winter for the homeless because it's temperate conditions. I don't think they understand the wind and the rain myself, but I don't have a good number on the on how many they are, but this may be one of the most significant winters we've had with some homeless who have very significant behavioral issues. And we face some real challenges there because of some of their mental health issues and some of their behaviors that they've already engaged in.
Maybe we just got a few minutes left, but I'm wondering if you can kind of describe some of those behaviors that that you're seeing.
Well, one of the those that follow us on Facebook saw a video several months ago of a woman who attacked one of our officers' cars with a screwdriver. And that's one of those folks that's wandering around downtown. Seeing some within the homeless community, violence towards each other, those kind of issues that really do create some safety issues both for those that are in the homeless community, our and others in our community, including ourselves.
You know, Terry's got another one here for us. Do our officers have body cameras?
That's a very good question. That's something that we are currently working on. It's a yes and no question. We have Astoria PD has a long history of using video. When I started in 92, we'd already purchased some. Back then it was commercial grade or residential grade cameras strapped to TVs mounted to the dash with suction cups, really prehistoric. So we're looking at moving that into body cams. We've got about six units probably that officers have purchased on their own and are using. And we're trying to make sure we make a wise technology purchase where we're picking from a company that will be there to support us as time goes on, that integrates with existing systems, and that integrates with our vehicle cameras, because I don't think we should abandon vehicle cameras to go to body cameras. I think we need both.
Okay. So. Well, it's really been a pleasure, Brad, visiting with Police Chief Brad Johnson and now Assistant City Manager. Appreciate you coming in, Brad.
Thanks, Jim.
And I'd urge our listeners to stick around for the always wonderful Albert Smith Friday Folk Show. Albert has a very nice taste in folk music, and I'd urge folks to stick around and listen to it. And we won't have a Friday show next week, but the week after that we will. So we'll talk to you then. Thank you.